One of the things that's really evident in Jesus' life and ministry is the role of questions. Jesus asks a lot of questions, and people ask Jesus a lot of questions, and sometimes Jesus answers their questions with questions, which is a confusing thing that happens a lot of the time in the Bible. And Jesus himself asks questions from a teaching perspective. Actually, we'll get back to that one in a second. Thank you. He asks from a teaching perspective. He also asks from a personal perspective. And people ask him a lot of questions. And the way that he answers those questions is really telling and kind of an important thing. So most of the questions, in fact, I'll post this when I post this online. One of the things that we're doing every week is posting video and audio. So if you're not here, no big deal. You can just listen to the audio. You can watch the video if you're really, like, brave and want to watch me for 20 minutes, which I don't recommend to anybody, but the video is there just in case you want to see it. We have the video and the audio and all of my notes, which are pretty much, it's kind of entertaining actually. You can look at my notes and see where I wandered off script, which is kind of fun. You can be like, wow, he did not mean to say that thing and that thing that he said, so that'll be cool too. But the idea is that you have the text, you have the audio, you have the video, anything that you want. You could share that with your friends, whatever you want to do. Not because we're trying to go viral, because we never will, but because we want to make sure that you understand, if you can't be here, the teaching is still available to you, and you can kind of keep in continuity with what's happening here, and you can keep in touch with us. So when I post that, I'll post this PDF I have called 173 Questions That Jesus Asked. And I think 173 is pretty close to right. I think there are a couple of things Jesus said that are kind of implied questions that you could add to that too. But that's a lot of questions throughout the Gospels. And most of them are this Socratic method kind of question, right? Where Jesus is sitting around and talking with his disciples and he says, what do you think about this? And he would ask a question and they would say something back, and then he would make a comment about what they said, and this sort of this back and forth kind of thing that Jerry does in class all the time, right? Socratic method is interesting. It's if you look at the definition of it, it's these are things that are designed to help the hearer work through what they believe. It's a dialectical method. That means it's dialogue-based. It's talking back and forth. It involves a discussion in which the defense of one point of view is questioned. So somebody says something, and then someone else questions it, and you kind of go back and forth. And in doing that, you actually kind of learn what you believe about something. Because if you say, well, I believe this, and nobody says anything, you go, well, then that must be true. Or if you say, I believe this, and someone questions it and says, let's take that apart, like we'll do in a few minutes when we discuss, then you get a chance to either defend what you're saying or to say, you know, I guess I really didn't have any basis for what I was saying. I've just always heard that. How do you know that that's true? Somebody told me when I was 12, so I've just always believed that that's true. Or I read it on Wikipedia, which is always true. Wikipedia is never wrong, and that's the best part about it. Aristotle attributes this to Socrates. It's the discovery of the method of definition and induction regarded as the essence of the scientific method. You don't often hear Jesus and the scientific method in the same sentence, but this is Jesus' method of teaching. It's Socratic. It's throwing questions out there. I'll give you a good one. In Mark chapter 12, Jesus is constantly being badgered by religious teachers and leaders and that kind of thing. And he's always asking questions, right? He's always saying, what do you think about this? I like when he asks his disciples, who do people say I am? And they all gave him all these different answers. Well, you're Elijah, you're Jeremiah, you're one of the prophets. And then he said, who do you think I am? Which is to say, not just what everybody else says, but what do you say? What do you really think? What do you believe? But Jesus is being hassled by so many religious teachers. He finally stands up one day randomly out of the blue and he says, while Jesus was teaching in the temple courts, he asked, why do the teachers of the law say that the Messiah, meaning him, is the son of David? David himself, speaking by the Holy Spirit, declared, the Lord said to my Lord, sit at my right hand until I put your enemies under your feet. David himself calls him Lord. How can he then be his son? And this is where you see this big change happen in how he's being attacked from a logical and an argumentative standpoint, because he throws out a question that nobody has the answer to and that nobody understands. Jesus asked a lot of questions, and he asked a lot of questions to teach Socratically, but he also asked a lot of questions to open up a conversation. And that's one of the things I find most interesting about Jesus is as he's going through his life and ministry, he will every once in a while say, he'll come across someone and he'll ask a question. Hey, Chris, you want to pull this down just a touch? I'm standing right in front of these speakers and it's bouncing back on me. Perfect. A question is often Jesus' way to open up the conversation, to move it from just an everyday conversation to something really vital and important, like the woman at the well. He says, will you give me some water? And he says, he opens up this conversation by asking her to do something for him, which was a thing that he shouldn't have done in his culture. He's walking on the road to Emmaus after his resurrection, which was one of my favorite Jesus stories because he just shows up and these guys are talking about Jesus and how terrible it was that Jesus was crucified, and Jesus walks along with them and he says, what are you talking about? And these guys don't understand that it's him for the entirety of that walk until they get back to their house and he breaks bread and they go, oh, now we see that it's Jesus. But his question is, what are you talking about? Their answer is to spill out all their feelings and emotions and all the things that have been happening and going on. Sometimes when Jesus healed people, he would ask them what they wanted, which sounds almost insulting, right? When he would come across somebody who is lame, you know, who's laying by the side of the road and they're crying out for him, Jesus would stop and say, what do you want me to do for you? Is that Jesus just being obnoxious? Is that Jesus just trying to say, what do you want? No, it's Jesus opening up a conversation and saying, what is it that you really want? What is it that you desire? And by saying what they want, they're able to say what they believe in, right? They're able to say, I believe that you can heal me. I have faith in you. He asked, what do you want me to do for you? He asked, do you want to get well? Which is, again, another goofy question. But Jesus also asked profound personal questions as he faced suffering, loss, and loneliness. And this is stuff that gets a little bit weird to talk about. Jesus asking questions. Now, Jesus is God. Jesus, you know, knows everything. He sets aside his divinity to become a human and to live on the earth and all of that kind of stuff. And yet he asks questions when he's going through his death and the crucifixion like this. Now, John chapter 12, now my soul is troubled, and what shall I say? Father, save me from this hour? No, it was for this very reason I came to this hour. In another of the Gospels, when he's praying there in Gethsemane, he says, Father, and this doesn't have a question mark on it, but I think it's a question. Father, if it be your will, allow this cup, meaning suffering, dying on the cross, to pass from me. Nevertheless, not my will, but yours, right? So Jesus is saying, is it possible that there's another way to do this? Is it possible that I don't have to walk through this? And yet, in the end, we know that Jesus chooses the cross. We know that Jesus chooses to be bound and whipped and beaten and crucified. I like in the middle of one of the trials, when he's being arrested for the very first time in the garden, he turns to the disciples and he asks them this question. Do you think I cannot call on my Father and he will at once put in my disposal more than 12 legions of angels? But how then would the scriptures be fulfilled that say it must happen this way? Jesus is asking and answering a question. And when he's doing it, he's making this point that I am making this decision, right? I am making this choice. And maybe the hardest one of all, and the one that we kind of skip over when we read the Bible and we read the things that Jesus says, is Jesus on the cross. It says in Mark 15, at about 3 p.m, Jesus cried out in a loud voice, Eloi, Eloi, lama sabachthani, I think is how you say that, which means, my God, why have you forsaken me? What a question from Jesus, who is himself God. God existent, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. And Jesus, at this point, is taking on the sins of the world, completely separated from God the Father, completely alone, and says, "Why have you forsaken me?" Does he know the answer to that question? Yeah. Is it still a real question? Absolutely. Because it's expressing his heart. It's expressing his emotion. It's expressing the pain and the loss that he feels at that moment. So Jesus asked questions to open doors of conversation, to teach, and because they expressed his pain and struggle. And questions are really important to our dialogue. I think if we're going to open up dialogue with people, if we're going to have a conversation about faith, it really relies a lot on asking questions. Because if you have a lot to say, and if you want to just start a conversation with somebody and say, "Hey, I just want to tell you a few things," that's not often as effective as asking the right questions. Had a conversation recently with someone, and they started to talk a little bit about faith and sort of, you know, cut off that conversation, like, "Oh, wow, I got into religion somehow." And so I just asked a question. And that question led to another question and led to more of a conversation. And if you're going to have that kind of conversation, sometimes it's asking the right questions. And in addition to Jesus asking questions for those two main reasons, or three main reasons, Jesus himself was asked a lot of questions. So when people asked Jesus questions, he had a couple of different responses. One, his response really depended on who was asking and who was in their heart, what was in their heart. And that's one of the things that Jesus had a great advantage of. He knew exactly what people were thinking when they asked him a question. With the religious people who are trying to trap him, trying to find something to accuse him of, he's harsh, he's sometimes argumentative, he's authoritative, he answers very cleanly and plainly, and he's sometimes very, very final in the things that he says. A lot of times he would answer with another question, especially when someone was trying to trick him into something. Like somebody says, "Good teacher, what about blah, 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 blah." And Jesus says, "Why do you call me good teacher?" Which is sort of an argumentative question, but it really changes the entire conversation because he says, "You started by calling me good. There's no one good but God. Why are you calling me good? Are you saying that I actually have some authority to speak on the subject?" When someone asked him, "Should we pay taxes to Caesar?" He says, "Well, show me a coin." "Well, whose face and inscription are on this?" So he's asking questions in response to questions. But with non-religious people, or people who were outside of, you know, that ruling class who had honest questions, most of the time, his way of dealing with the question was very interested and very engaged and engaging. And Jesus was really interested in asking questions and listening to questions from people who were honestly trying to figure things out. And the other thing you note when people are asking Jesus questions is he is secure. He's not trying desperately to prove that he's God. He's not trying desperately to prove that God is good. He's not trying to just come up with something that would somehow win an argument so that he could say, I have absolutely shown you that what I say is right. He's secure. He's not trying to end the, you know, entire conversation in one or two words. He recognized that whether the answer to the question we received or not depended almost entirely on the person who's asking. If you're interested in what I have to say, if you're asking with right motives, or if you're asking with openness, then the answer to the question is something you might receive. But if you're asking to try and justify yourself, or you're asking because you want an argument or whatever it was, the way that he answered that question was totally different. I like that he ends this one big argument. But the big question was always, whose authority do you do these things by? Jesus, you're not a rabbi, so you're not supposed to be teaching, you're not supposed to be saying all of these things. And Jesus says, "Okay, I will answer you what authority I do these things by if you will answer one question for me. And my question is, by whose authority did John the Baptist baptize people?" They talked amongst themselves and they said, "Well, if we say it was God's authority, then he will say, then why didn't we believe him? If he said it was Satan's authority, then the people will hate us because people believe that John's a prophet. So they said, we don't know whose authority he baptizes by. And Jesus said, then neither will I tell you. Most of us, we don't answer things like that. We want to justify ourselves, right? We want to prove ourselves. We want to, if someone asks us, especially about our faith, right? We want to prove that our faith is logical and rational and reasonable, and that that we're not crazy people, and that this is a good thing. And sometimes Jesus' answers stop short of proving things. His answers stop short of ending the conversation and winning the argument. He would sometimes just say, well, I'm just not going to tell you, or I'm not going to answer that question. So, Jesus, I think, was not threatened by doubt. He wasn't walking around going, oh man, I hope everybody believes in me. I really hope some people believe in me. I really, 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 really hope some people like me and believe in me, and then I can be their Messiah and it'll be great. Jesus is very secure. He knows who he is, and he knows that some will receive him, some will reject him, some want to have this conversation, and some just want to win an argument, and some just want to be right. And there's all of that happening in our lives every day, right? In conversations that we have with people, and they're not just conversations about faith. Sometimes we have conversations, you've all had a conversation with someone who just wants to be right, and that's super awesome. And then you have a conversation with someone who's actually listening to you. That's super awesome in a non-sarcastic way, right? Listening and asking a question is a super powerful thing. So here's what we want to do. We're going to have a little table talk time. And again, the idea of this is that we can't solve all of this in the 10 minutes we're going to spend talking together. What we can do is start a conversation that you may want to have on the ride home or throughout the week or post on our Facebook wall or whatever. You might want to talk about afterwards over some coffee. The idea is to start a conversation and to you know, just get some thoughts going on. And you may find something along the way, like when Jesus would ask a question, you might find something you say, well, I'm not sure what I believe about that. And that's okay too. So, here's some questions to get you started. Has anyone ever questioned your faith vigorously? Yes, once or twice. Tell your table about that or talk about that. These are ideas. You could say, forget all these ideas. I want to talk about my own thing. Did you have the right answers? I was talking to somebody this week and they said, yeah, it's great. But I have this friend who's like a total atheist and he knows the Bible better than I do. And every time I talk to him, I don't have the right answers. Did they leave convinced? How do you feel afterward? Those are some good questions. Describe a time somebody asked you a good question that opened up conversation, then listen to your thoughts. Has that ever happened to you? That would be awesome. What was the result? And then from the video we were looking at earlier, is the church, do you think, a safe place for questions and doubt? Should it be? Should this be the kind of place where we really do have the answers and we know what we know and we tell people whether they're right or wrong? What are some ways we can or have made it unsafe? That should it be question, I can argue both sides of it. So if you'd like me to, let me know. So why don't we take about 10 minutes, talk amongst your table. I've given you a topic, and then I'm going to come back with one more thought, and then Isaac's going to lead us in worship tonight. So that'll be really cool. Let me give you one more thing about Jesus and doubt, right? How did Jesus respond to doubters? People who are really struggling with the Nicodemus guy was like, I just don't understand what you're saying. How can I be born again? And what does this all mean? And people like Peter and Thomas who believed but also had just massive epic failures of doubt, right? You find this phrase that Jesus says a lot of times. Oh, you of little faith, why did you doubt? And when we read that in English without any recording of how Jesus said it, we generally look at it and go, oh, Jesus is just being really harsh, right? He's like, oh, you of little faith, why did you doubt? I just can't believe you. In fact, at one point he says, how long will I be with you and how long must I suffer you? Which is a great thing to say. It's like, how long do I have to put up with you disciple people? But the more I read what Jesus is actually saying in the context around it, like Peter is out on the water, right? He's walking on the water. He's the only person besides Jesus that we know of that walked on water. And he gets scared because he realizes at some point that he's walking on water, and that freaks him out. And he begins to doubt, and then he begins to sink, and Jesus pulls him back up and he says, "You of little faith, why did you doubt?" And it's not this indictment of him, right? It's more like a coach's, you know, smack on the back. He's like, "Oh man, why did you doubt? You totally had it. You were walking on water. It was awesome. And then you doubted. What are you doing, man? Do better next time." This is Jesus' response to doubt. In fact, I think that you can see it in the fruit of their life, that Jesus is just pushing them on and saying, "Come on, have more faith next time." These are all men who died for believing in Jesus, except for John, who died in exile in prison. It's kind of this, "Peter, you almost had it. Don't give up next time." And Thomas, I like Thomas because Thomas says, "You know what? I don't buy this. It's not scientifically provable that Jesus has risen from the dead, even though you all say he has." And he says, "I won't believe it until I see the nail scars in his hands, until I see the scar in his side." And Jesus appears to Thomas and says, "Why don't you put your hands in the scars, and why don't you feel this one and see that it's me and I'm flesh and I'm blood?" And Jesus is so redemptive in that, right? And Thomas goes, "Whoa, okay, it really is you, my Lord and my God." He kneels down and Jesus says, "Blessed are you." And the rest of the phrase is, "Blessed are you because you have seen and believe. But even more blessed are those who have not seen and yet believe." And we like that last part. We say, yeah, even more blessed because we've never seen Jesus and we believe, and we're even more blessed than Thomas. But Thomas is still blessed. Even all of us doubters get in on that blessing too.